The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 13th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Haydn Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson, that's EML ticker, and Haydn talks about the potential for a low capital cost of a port upgrade for the Chemisette Potash project and the scoping study, which is progressing ahead of schedule. Plus, I also have on the podcast today Alan Green of Brand Communications, and Alan talks about the following stocks: Europa Metals, that's EUZ, Andlas Energy and Power, ADL, Concurrent Technologies, CNC, and a US stock, Harley Davidson, and the ticker there is HOG, of course. Plus, as always, I have two lists: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. You can see top tens of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Haydn Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson. That's EML ticker. Haydn, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be here.
Now, you announced some positive news yesterday about a low capital cost of a port upgrade. And we'll go into that, details of that. And there's also another bit of news in there you sneaked out, which I thought, wow, that's interesting. So we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, Haydn, just for people not familiar with the company, explain, what is Emerson all about, please?
Emerson is developing the Chemisette Potash project, which is located in northern Morocco. It's a great location, fairly shallow resource for a potash perspective, and as a result, management believes it has the potential to be a low capex, high margin potash development, which is very rare, and we're moving quickly towards delivering a scoping study.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's go into this. I mean, because I think you've got an excellent graphic that I've retweeted, new tweet out there, and it's on Vox. But there's an excellent graphic showing the low capital cost of your project. But this has just got better, is it?
Yeah, it has. We've delivered another small piece of the project. It's not the whole project in and of itself, but it's one of the small components that makes up the project. And once again, we've seen huge capital savings against virtually all of our peers, but specifically the ones that we've got in the graph that you're referring to are Canadian peers and a company called Core Potash, which is located in Africa. And all of these capital cost savings that we're making in each of these small components that make up parts of the scoping study are leading to a cumulative capital saving thus far of about $1.2 billion relative to your typical Canadian peer. That is an absolutely enormous cost saving before we've even gotten to the mine. And that's one of the key reasons that we believe that this has the potential to be a low capex development. And then leading into the high margin story, as a result of our location, regardless of what our operating cost is to mine gate, we will be competitive with virtually all of the potash producing peers because they are so remote from their end markets. So positive news flow, and we hope it'll get better.
Yeah, and is it the case that you are around about, 93% less capital expenditure needed for your project than most people, or the top end of the peers anyway?
Yeah, for those components that we've released thus far, we are certainly well above 90% cost savings against our Canadian peers and a number of our African peers. And that's predominantly around access to mineralization and then the infrastructure solution at the back end. How you get your product from your mine site to your end customer is a key component of a lot of the capex for these other projects. So we've saved over 90% in those aspects. I don't expect we'll save a huge amount of money on a capital intensity basis for the underground mine or for the processing, because an underground potash mine is the same regardless of where it is. So we've really announced the capital cost savings already. And now we're just waiting to finalise the final design and engineering of the actual project before we release a scoping study.
Well, do you know what? You're going against the grain, because on Twitter a while back, there's about six companies I follow highly that had sort of key milestones supposed to be delivered the end of Q3. Not one of the companies delivered on their milestones out of six companies. But I'm seeing you're actually bringing forward your scoping study, because it was due to be released in Q1, I think, wasn't it, 2019? But now you reckon it'll be done before the end of the year?
Yeah, you're right, Justin. It is a very difficult process to go through in delivering these studies. We're fortunate to have absolutely outstanding engineers in our team working closely with Golder and Urquhart, who are very experienced in these sorts of projects, which makes things a lot easier for us as a company. And as you mentioned, yes, we're well ahead of schedule. We're now 100% confident that the project will be released to the market this quarter. And we're working as quickly as we can to get it out as quickly as we possibly can. But it's all moving ahead very nicely indeed.
Okay, and for people not aware of what a scoping study entails, so what will be delivered in that? What are the kind of figures people will see?
The scoping study is really the first technical assessment of a project's characteristics to see whether or not it can, it can physically be achieved what you're going to be talking about, in this case producing MOP, muriate of potash. It wraps some economic numbers around it, so it provides a capital cost estimate and an operating cost estimate, and as a result, we'll be able to deliver a full end-to-end design of the project, what we think it could look like. And we'll deliver some capital cost and some operating cost estimates. And of course, probably the most important thing for many investors is the economics, how it looks in the current low potash price environment. Does it make sense at current low potash prices? Mm-hmm. And if it does, it's worth us spending a little bit more money on and going to the next de-risking phase. So it's really that first step of what could this project be.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Hayden, one last thing. If people are listening to this and like the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
We're rapidly advancing the development of the Chemisette Potash project and delivering the key design and CapEx estimates quite quickly and, as you mentioned, ahead of schedule. The results that we've received thus far continue to confirm management's belief that the Chemisette project has the potential to be low CapEx and high margin, which is very rare in the potash space. And we will imminently deliver a scoping study which will outline all of the technical assumptions we've made and provide economics that we believe will be compelling even in today's relatively low potash price environment.
Marvellous stuff, Hayden. Good to catch up with you. And hopefully, like you say, you're a big milestone coming up. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in a not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Do you all right, Al?
Yeah, just I can't drink anymore though. I went out last week with some colleagues in the city and had a few drinks at the weekend, and it just lingers, doesn't it? You can't recover.
Yeah.
At our advanced years, you can't recover like you would have done, say, 10 years ago.
I know, exactly. So you do a 2 or 3 day hangover. That's the trouble. But you know, I feel like the markets are acting at the moment.
Yes.
Just really just, you know, stumbling from one sort of, either up one day or they're sort of gone crazy the next day. And like the American markets yesterday were nuts. I mean, they're down like over 2%. You know, the S&P and the Nasdaq was down 2.75%. And largely down to Apple, apparently. You know, a while back, Apple said, we're not now going to produce the number of phones we're selling. Now, there is only one reason why they'd say that, isn't there? If the number of phones you were selling was going to go up, you would happily reveal how many phones you're selling. But they said, now we're not going to announce that anymore. We're not going to say that. And also, one of the people that provide them with the tech, that is facial recognition, that opens up phones, apparently they've been told, they said they're by a major supplier of theirs or a major partner of theirs, that they want to slow down on that thing. So it's a knock on the box. So Apple went down about 5%. Now, Apple's obviously the biggest company in the world, and it makes up a lot of these indices. So, all tech took a bit of a knock, and there's worries now for the global economy because they're reckoning, okay, if Apple are slowing down, then that's not a good thing. So, and I am bearish on the economy now. I think we've hit, it'll take a while, I think, but I think we've hit peak pretty much everything.
Yes.
Peak in employment. Yeah. I think the oil price has taken a whack as well. It doesn't help with Trump. The biggest economy in the world is warring on tariffs with the second biggest economy in the world. And after a while, you know, that worry, that psychological worry, plays into real stuff. People pull back on investments because they begin to worry, you know, and I just think that's what's happening at the moment. And I think we'll have a rally towards the year end. But I think we're starting to see a grind lower here. You've got several things going on. I mean, even if you look at the real world thing, interest rates are going up. Okay, so you know, everyone's going to be, it's more expensive to borrow stuff. And also, on top of that, the Fed are tightening the balance sheet. So when they had the QE before, and their balance sheet has gone massive, they're pulling in about $600 billion. They're shrinking the balance sheet by $600 million. And that's worth about, apparently, 1% or 2% or one or two hikes on the interest rate. So there's a lot of things going on. And I think next year, next 2 years, will be a bit of a struggle in the markets, you know?
Well, you say that, yeah, but on the flip side, our Chancellor said in the budget last week that the age of austerity was coming to an end, and
or maybe but we are a tiny economy in the cut, and do you know what? Even he didn't have enough money to plough into schools. He gave him a couple of, we are nothing in the global economy. We will take a
hit. I know that, No, I know we are a mere blip on the we're a pimple on the skin of the European economy. I know that.
You know, whatever happens globally, I think, you know, you've got to look at America and China. If whatever happens to those two, if those two have an issue, then it's you know, it's going to be a big problem. So I'm quite bearish, as you can probably tell. I just think there's lots of things going on, and on top of that, you've got Brexit, you know, which is not good for business. Business hasn't got any transparency. I'm voting for Brexit. What I'm saying is, it's taken so long to get some transparency that businesses are tightening their belts, and they're not going to go bold and do big new investments when they don't know what's around the corner, you know? So, I mean, even if it's temporary, I think this blip will play out, you know, this ripple effect will sort of, you know, affect us for the next 12 months, I think.
I think so. I think what we're going to see is we are going to see this drift one day high, one day low, running up to Christmas, and then we'll probably see a Santa rally. And then really how, once we see retailers starting to report after Christmas, that will set the tone for the year. And I think I don't think it'll be much better, but you know, I don't expect a complete crash, but I do expect it to be a bit of a struggle first quarter next year. Yeah, I'm with you on that. But you know, there's a lot of good things going on too. You know, there's some stuff I'm going to talk about later. It's not all negative coming out of America. I want to talk about one stock in particular, but you know, there's an awful lot to be bullish about. And you know, there are some new economies emerging that you know could really sort of drive economies forward, where at the moment the potential to do that, it doesn't exist, because they're in the or the technology or the idea is in its infancy. So, you know,
I'm saying this now. This time next year, we'll be in recession.
Yep. Okay.
That's what I reckon. By the way,
UK could be right.
UK unemployment increased. Unemployment increased by 21,000, which is not a lot, but 3 months. There's just some new figures out just now by the ONS. That's nothing really, but I think we've had hit peak everything at the moment. We've done. We have 10 years of bull market. All these things are adding up, you know. I just think we can't.
You're right. Yeah. We have been saying for some time we're due a correction, but of course a correction per se will be a sustained correction. So whether that will be globally or selectively by country is hard to tell. But certainly, you know, with the major economies like the US and China having powered ahead for so long, I think any crash when it comes in the US, particularly the noises that Trump is making, will be a major one. But there will be exceptions. So, you know, I think you've got to out of that will come investment opportunities, the like of which we haven't seen for years. So,
I've invested through several sort of recessions and several downturns and corrections. And I've, you know, got more now in my account than I had any time in the past. And I just genuinely see a recession as an excellent opportunity for investing. Yep. You know, you get really aggressive, you know, bills off the bottom there. So if you know, what I'm saying is, make sure you have some cash available to take advantage of some cracking bargains, you know, because you'll see stocks marked down. It'll be like, you know, a massive sort of, you know, Black Friday event for a couple of months, you know. So you've got to make sure you have some cash and hopefully prepare for it. Because, you know, I say it's always good to have some cash, but I think prepare for a decent bit of bargain hunting. Cool. All right. Well, stocks wise, what are we looking at, Al?
Okay, so last we discussed European metals briefly last week. EUZ just really wanted to, because I think again this is one of the stocks that everyone was expecting movements ahead from the company. But I mean, actually, the company has done really well since changing its name from Ferrum Crescent to Europa. Of course, during the last quarter, the company increased its JORC inferred resource for the Toral lead zinc silver project, which of course is in a a region that's politically pro-mining. It's a long-established mining. There's an long-established mining resource at Toral. Excellent infrastructure, excellent lines of communication, ways, and also methods to get the raw materials out to market. But during the quarter, of course, the company increased the JORC inferred resource from 60 million tons lead zinc at 6.9% zinc equivalent to 90 million tons, and also 24 grams at 24 grams per ton, which is was near on 20% increase in the overall tonnage to be drawn from the ground. And of course, this is with the updated mining technologies, the updated methods of analyzing data, analyzing samples from the site, and you know, the team there, the management team now have a much better, much stronger understanding of the resource that they're working with. Currently, the company have about $500,000 in the bank, and they're progressing forward to the next one, which of course is drilling its secured accommodation rig for mobilization to Toral. And we're now awaiting news on this, on drilling results and further updates from the site, from the samples, and obviously the next step to go to move just from an exploration company into a production company at the same time. So it's been a critical period for the company, but progress is good. And I think I'm seeing a lot of people sort of moaning that they're not seeing progress quickly enough. Actually, you know, this has happened pretty quickly. It's happened since the summer, and you know, we've seen good progress in the share price since then. I will declare an interest at this stage. I'm a shareholder in EUZ and will remain so, because I think this has got an awful long way to go. In terms of the current valuation, which is $6.5 million market cap, to compared to companies within this peer group, I mean, we, in many cases, you'd see companies on the market with this sort of asset being valued at anything up to 10 to 15 times the level that EUZ is currently valued at. So I'm sitting on this because I like the environment. I like the fact that it's a benign political environment for a company, a mining company, to operate in, and easy lines of communication, easy ways to get the stuff to market, and it's a well-established resource. And a 20% upgrade in the JORC estimate for the minerals that are in the ground there is, to my mind, a pretty damn good deal. So I'm staying with it.
Yeah, no, I think people are just waiting for the scoping study, because originally, I know, Lawrence came in the podcast, he did say it'd be by end of Q3, but scoping studies, you know, are different. You can have different levels of, you know, detail in a scoping study. You can do bare minimum and qualify under a JORC sort of, you know, scoping study and be recognised as one, but you can put lots of detail in it, and it can edge towards being a pre-feasibility study, you know. So, and apparently they've got a lot more data they have to input, so it's taking a lot more time. They didn't want to rush it. And do you know what? Frankly, I don't blame them. In this market, I'd hold on to the last week of December just to catch the Santa rally. But I just think, you can't rush it. Like I said, they've got a lot of data there. They've got more data from their own drilling as well as historical drilling. And so they will optimise it as best as possible. And they've got some good guys working on the ground there, you know, some guys with pedigree there. And so I just think, be patient. You know, like I say, when you look at it, they've got that, you know, 6.5 million market cap. That's all it is. And that's the potential, that asset has a potential to churn out, you know, sort of double digits of sort of millions of free cash flow every year for several years. And so, I think it's, like I said, it's in Spain. It's not in some far-flung reaches where the government are quite questionable and all that stuff. But it's in Spain, and Spain, you know, have a problem with unemployment. They need to up their answers. So they're very pro-mining, very pro-employment, stuff like that. So, just a bit of patience. You know, it's a struggle. In these markets, I mean, people do tend to sell off. When there's no news, people do tend to do a bit of selling. And so you can, I mean, if you have cash, like I said, always, if you have cash in your portfolio, take advantage of some bargains in this market.
Yeah, very much so.
Hopefully we'll see it Hopefully it'll be superbly timed when the market is just going to sound a rally or towards that. So because at the moment, like I said, it's a really undecided market, and it does breed doubt, you know.
It is flat, and that's the thing. And investors become impatient when they see nothing, and when they just see markets drifting, and they see Trump going around banging the drum and just saying the first thing that comes into his head. It can get scary. But the thing is, value will out. There's still a market out there, and there are opportunities always in that market. And this we believe is an undervalued stock. Where it is, the assets. The asset is worth a tremendous amount of money, and compared to other mining projects, it's a fairly straightforward, once the scoping study is complete, as you say, Jess, it's a fairly straightforward process to get the stuff out of the ground and get it to market. So that really appeals to me, and that's why I remain a holder in EZ.
Marvellous. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, back to an old favourite, Andalas Energy, ADL, of course, is the epic code. This morning, the company published an update. The company is currently operating three projects, which is the Badger project, which is at exploration, currently being explored in the North Sea with Eagle Drilling. The Coulter project, which is a farming project, which is just off the coast of Bournemouth, and also the Bunga Mas project in Indonesia, which is very close to development. News this morning that Andalas, the drilling rig that they're currently working on, is drilling a well up in Wick, and that will start in December. Once that's completed, it will be taken down to the Coulter well just off the coast of Bournemouth, and they will start drilling. So probably early next year, quarter one next year, we'll have news from drilling for Andalas shareholders, which is a great thing. I mean, Simon Gorringe, the CEO, promised when he took over that he was looking for near-term cash-generative projects. This we hope will be exactly that. But what I like is that since he's taken over, there's been no rash promises, no promises of jam tomorrow. It's been a gradual, controlled development of projects, investment into projects, and he's ticked the boxes all the way. He's done what he said he's going to do, and it could be a transformational time in January if we hear good news from the drilling from the Coulter well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do hold a bit of stock in Andalas, and I quite like Simon. And sometimes you invest in people, or you have to, because the people are driving the projects, you know?
Well, they are, absolutely. And I think, obviously, the history there with Dave Whitby is well documented. I won't go into that again because we've discussed that so many times. But as you say, you buy into people. And when I first met Simon, I thought, here's a guy that knows his stuff. And the team there, with Robert Arnott, the chairman, and Dan Jorgensen and the other guys, there's a lot of experience, in drilling in the North Sea, in the region. So they're engaged in projects that they know about, whilst, of course, they still have the legacy projects and the new Bunga Mas project in Indonesia as well. So it's a multi-asset company and with a number of projects on the go. But as Simon said this morning, there will be a period where they're drilling after the Wick well at Coulter in the new year, and we should have some news that we can get excited about. Like you, I'm also shareholder in Andalas as well, but then again, you probably gathered that already. So.
Of course. Well, that's the middle name, isn't it? Andalas Green. Marvellous.
Some say.
Anything else, Al?
Two more for you. First of all, I wanted to bring to listeners' attention the company called Concurrent Technologies. Epic code is CNC. Based in Colchester, they're basically an IT company. They develop high-end embedded computer products for use within telecoms, defense, security, telemetry, aerospace, and a number of other applications. They use Intel processors and a range of other sort of well-known hardware, and develop these for specific applications, often operating in extreme environments, such as extreme heat and extreme cold. The company was discussed by Vectorvest, or an article was written by Vectorvest back in April this year, where it triggered a number of metrics. The company set a target then of 89p, and it briefly hit the target and then pulled back over the summer, so I had a fairly indifferent summer. But the company announced interims in September, slight rise in turnover, slight fall in pre-tax profit, but cash balances were pretty well where they were. The company also raised a dividend, and on the back of the continued expansion of exports, which were now generate up to 80, nearly 90% of group revenues. They've launched a number of other products during the year as well, and again the opportunity, the Vectorverse sees another opportunity in the stock, which is currently trading at 77p. It's got a fundamental valuation of 86 pence per share, but the charting configuration presently denotes a target of just over a pound. So there are a couple of indicators here that are showing that the company could progress to this level. Increase in dividends significant. The chairman's very bullish about the future and a series of new product launches. It seems that all the fundamental elements are in place to drive this company forward. And, you know, this is a company that's only worth $55 million. So if it carries on growing in its sector, you know, who knows, at this level it could even become the focus for one of the larger players in the sector, and possibly even as an acquisition opportunity. So Vectorverse's growth potential, I don't currently hold the stock, but I like the look of the chart, and I think it's worth it, warrants closer inspection.
It's so earned pre-tax, was it, I was looking there, pre-tax profits of 1.1 million, did they, before tax? They're quite rich, highly valued, aren't they, concurrent, because they are, well, market cap of 55-56 million.
Yep, 55-56 million. Earnings per share of 1.5p. Turnover's up slightly. It's up 100,000 to just under 8 million for the period, and it's got about the same amount of cash it had sort of at the end of June last year. But it's raised a dividend, you know, which is a good sign, and it looks well placed for the future. As I say, if you're looking for sort of bearish indicators there, the fact that after the blip in April, it had a fairly quiet summer, but you know, that may well be just the way the earnings for the company fall and develop over the year. But certainly it's flagged on Vectorverse indicators, which is always significant. And the fact it's already been picked out before is a very good sign, because you know, it's the company's got to tick a number of boxes in order to get onto the Vectorverse platform in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yes, we discussed Trump. We discussed America, the outlook for America. Now, I'm going to change tack here and talk about Harley Davidson, which, of course, is the iconic motorcycle manufacturer. Listed in the US, you can buy the stock as an ADR, but you need to fill in, if you've got a UK dealing account, you need to fill in one of those W8 Ben forms first of all before you can do that. But the reason it's caught my eye is there are a number of reasons. Firstly, I have been a motorcyclist all my life, and I have always I ride Japanese sports bikes, I ride adventure touring bikes, I've got classic bikes, all the rest of it. So I've always looked at Harley as a bit of a joke. The hugely loyal following in America, and you know, where you get groups of Harley Davidson owners, they're hugely loyal to them. But for the European rider who prefers a more sporting sort of machine, it's that they've always fallen well short, simply because the bikes didn't handle and the brakes were rubbish. But I'd noticed a sea change in Harley over the past few years. So much so that I recently changed one of the bikes I had, and I bought one, and I have to say I'm absolutely blown away by it. It's a fantastic piece of kit. It handles, it stops, and you've got this fantastic iconic V-twin motor as well, which is at the heart of it. So why is it worth investing in? The Harley Davidson actually fell foul of Donald Trump's new strategy because it started to ship out some of its production and manufacturing into outside of the U.S., which of course is sacrilege. You know, if you're a born and bred American, but Harley have done that simply because with the tariffs that Trump is slapping on, it's going to make the company uncompetitive when they're selling bikes abroad. Also, looking at the five-year chart, the stock has literally just come off a five-year low of $39. It's been as high as $70. Pays a fairly dividend, fairly decent yield, about 3.5-4% as well. The markets were bemoaning the upcoming quarter three figures that were published at the end of last month. Harley blew that out the water. A net income of $130 million was almost double the $68 million last year. Although retail sales fell in the US, sales in Europe and into the UK rose quite substantially, which actually ties in with my own experience and perception of what Harley are doing over here. So, if you were looking for a stock in the industry as a recovery play, I think Harley are probably very well placed to do that. They've got arguably the highest or the biggest brand or the biggest motorcycle brand ever. And as a brand, it's transcended that in many ways. It's obviously used in clothing and has so many other. You've got lifestyle stores and all the rest of it, which have no motorcycles in at all, but they just have all the gear. But also, the company, I think, are recognizing the push forward into new propulsion technologies, and they have developed a range of electric bikes and also a range of European bikes that are already in the showrooms over here and selling pretty well. So, company's just off a 5-year low. Great set of third quarter figures. Okay, all of the issues we discussed earlier about the outlook for the global economy, you'd have to weigh that off. But if you were looking to invest into an iconic brand that's had a tough 5 years and could be on the turn, Harley Davidson could just be their company. Epicode, of course, is Hog. Aptly named, because of course Harley's known as Hogs, but I think this is one that's warrants a closer look, and you may be surprised.
Yeah, I don't have any access to international markets at all on my account. I've not even tried. I don't know. Okay. Do you? Is it just America or anywhere else?
I can't. Yeah, you can access other markets. I mean, you can contact your broker. Obviously, we like to buy online and make it easy. But with the larger stocks, with the larger US stocks, of course, you can buy Apple and Microsoft fairly easily as ADRs. But you've got to complete those forms. Some of the stocks are dual listed over here. But if you complete that form, the W8BEN form on your dealing account, you can actually purchase the stock. Or of course, if you trade derivatives, if you're spread betting, then you can actually spread bet the stock as well. Or perhaps take a CFD and go along on a CFD. Obviously, if you're going to get the dividend as well, you'll want to own the underlying stock.
Yeah. Do you know what? Part of me thinks I've got enough sort of opportunity in this country. I know, I know a lot of people do trade other markets, but people often ask me, "You look at this stock there." And I say, "Do you know what? There's too many opportunities." I think the trick is to narrow it down. You know. That's and I think because big stocks, small stocks, you can go all different kinds of investments, ETFs, all that, international markets. I think, no, I've got too many options. That's the trouble. I need to focus more, you know?
Well, there is that, but also, I'm a great believer. If you know something about the industry,
I agree with that.
I do know about bikes. I've ridden bikes all my life, and also, Harley Davidson up to a few years ago, to me, they were a laughing stock because they just didn't handle, they just didn't brake, but. what they've done in the past few years is nothing short of remarkable. And now, clearly, the quarter three figures, what they've done is impacting on those figures. So they might, their biggest market, of course, is America, and they're still struggling with sales there. But sales, well, elsewhere in the world are doing okay. So I think Harley have recognized this sea change, and probably Trump is a factor in that as well. And they're adjusting their strategy. And for me, to get on that bike and to be able to ride it and stop the way I like to ride and have this hulking great V-twin, you know, it's a fantastic experience. And certainly in terms of riding experience, is right up there with the very best. So, you know, I think they have turned the corner. And also a lot of the new electric bikes, you know, lithium power with these lithium batteries, you know, they've got some great ideas there. And in many ways, they're ahead of the European and the Japanese manufacturers, which is a very strong thing. So, if you're looking to invest into this sector, clearly it's not without its risks. But I think I think Harley at a 5-year low could be one to look at right now.
Yeah, no, do you know what? That's exactly what Peter Lynch says, isn't it? One up on Wall Street. And he said, you know, you don't have to be an analyst or know everything about every stock. He said, you should look around you. What do you use? Are there stuff you swear by? You know, and
exactly,
when you notice something like this, it's sort of the groundswell. And you can often be, you know, months ahead of the reporting figures. If everyone's, you know, within your niche, within that area that you have an interest in, if everyone's saying, this is good, actually, this is changed, they've changed, you know, that will sort of become, it'll wash out through the balance statements and the profit and loss account in about 6 to 12 months' time. So you can be ahead of that. So that's always a good thing, isn't it? You know?
Well, it is, and in the run-up to those numbers, the stock was at a 5-year low, $35.99, and it's come back. It's now $40.78 since that time. Now, of course, that could just be an upward blip in an overall downward trend. But my sense is that with that, obviously, they would then have to maintain those sales for the fourth quarter and the full year to sustain that upward move. But I think just looking at what's happened and looking at their change in their approach to manufacturing, and clearly acknowledging the fact that what they did before was out of date, is a really good thing. And as I say, that's with my, I've many years experience on riding bikes, and you just get to know the industry, you understand what drives it, the dynamics behind it. And bike sales have struggled over the past year, but in many ways a market like that gives an innovative manufacturer an opportunity to grab more market share. So,
Marvellous stuff. Al, thanks for that, fella. And get on your bike, fella. Off you go.
Indeed, on my bike, off into the sunset.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Fox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Core Potash. That's KP2. At 4, Infrastrata. Talked about those with Malky on the podcast yesterday, INFA. At 3, Alpha Growth, ALGW, and of course Danny Swick, Chief Operating Officer, was on the podcast yesterday. At 2, IQE. I think they've had a bit of a profits warning, haven't they? And at number 1, it's OilX, OEX. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs came from the following companies. At 5, it's Upland Resources, WIC Well Update. At 4, Ascent Resources, resignation of Director of ARSO. At 3, Rehabil Resources, update on WIC and Coulter. At 2, it's EVR Holdings, content licensing agreement with Anomaly Partners. And number 1, most liked RNS, came from United Oil and Gas, Coulter appraisal well update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.